Okay, everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, is...
Sesame, $10 of crack cocaine and Carla.
It's either a good deal or a bad deal. I'm not really sure.
I'm not sure. I did some research. I couldn't really find much on that.
So did you have to get your name changed this time? Did you pay in crack or in U.S. currency?
I paid in Bitcoin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, not really Bitcoin, just cryptocurrency in general.
Oh, okay. Was it just like the concept of cryptocurrency or specific cryptocurrency?
It was, it bounced around between several different cryptocurrencies in order to like evade the authorities. So there's like pretty much like 10 different transactions based on a different identity that I have that's only a CIA kind of fake identity, because I also work for the spy agencies. And I just admitted that. Damn it. Oh, well.
Well, ignore that, folks. Sesame does not work for the CIA.
No, I don't. I do not.
Or the FBI.
No, don't.
Or Homeland Security.
Well, no, I don't.
Or the local police department.
I did work on a Tiger Cruise at one point. That was fun.
Oh, okay.
Well, it was fun for the first 2 days, and then it got really serious.
Got really sad. Yeah. Yeah. So, today on the show, folks, we are covering the 1990 made-for-Saturday-morning cartoon special.
Wow.
Entitled Cartoon All-Stars to the Rescue. It is a... it is a 1990 American animated television film that is like a half hour long, starring many characters from several animated television series that were on Saturday mornings or afternoons at that time. It was financed by McDonald's, Ronald McDonald Children's Charities. It was originally simulcast for a limited time on April 21st, 1990 on all four major American television networks.
Oh,
yeah, all simultaneously. And I think it was on a couple cable channels too. I think it might have been on like Nickelodeon and Disney Channel or something at the same time too. And it was also, and also some independent stations too that, you know, weren't one of the major four. McDonald's also released a VHS home video edition of the special distributed by Buena Vista Home Entertainment, which is owned by Disney, which opened with an introduction from President George H.W. Bush and First Lady Barbara Bush and their dog Millie. Can't forget Millie. Yeah.
Millie was high during this interview.
Oh, yeah. High on marijuana flavored milk bones.
And,
It was produced by the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences Foundation and Southern Star Productions, and it was animated overseas by Wang Film Productions. And there's a musical number in this that is called The Wonderful Ways to Say No, and it was written by Academy Award-winning composer Alan Menken and lyricist Howard Ashman, who also wrote songs for Walt Disney's animation studios, The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin.
That's how serious they took this movie.
I know.
Or show.
Okay, so yeah, basically this was during the whole, you know, Reagan and then into the Bush era of the whole Just Say No campaign going around and stuff, and, you know, telling kids in the weirdest ways possible the dangers of drugs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I remember actually watching this when it came out.
I think I do too.
And I remember just being excited because I got to see, you know, Garfield hanging out with Elf and Winnie the Pooh and whatnot, you know? So
it's like a crossover episode, literally. Mm-hmm. That was like a normal thing.
This is like the cartoon Avengers.
Kind of. Little bit, yeah.
Okay, so what were your initial thoughts after watching this?
It was okay. It kind of felt like a drug trip a little bit.
Indeed.
And the animation style was okay. You know, good cartoon style. It's kind of before the computer animated. I mean, I guess they did probably use some kind of computer, but it kind of had that hand-drawn type of
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was mostly
to
hand-drawn because at that time that's what most animation was. Yeah.
it.
Like
Yeah, it was okay. I liked it. It was very trippy though. I mean, if they really wanted it to, that was their plan, was to really kind of demonstrate like what drugs do to your brain. I think this might have had the opposite than the intended effect, because people might see that and be like, "Oh, I kind of want to experience that actually, because it
Yeah.
seems like a wild ride." So I don't know. I'm thinking this probably drove a certain amount of people to drugs, but I can't really confirm that.
Well, they've done studies and even the DARE program drove more kids to drugs than it drove away from drugs, I think.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't know if it was more, but it drove a lot more than they hoped it would. I remember
Well, that's still
I remember all
like.
that shit when I was a kid. Like you'd always have like these, anti-violence and anti-drugs and anti-guns and all this other shit coming to your school. People, I remember one time we had a when I was in high school, we had a they had a couple like inmates or something from somewhere. At least they came in with chains around their ankles
Oh my God.
and in orange jumpsuits and talked to us about the dangers of like gangs and shit.
Jesus Christ. That's gotta be humiliating for them.
My thing is I don't know if they were real or if they were just actors wearing those
Yeah, they could
costumes.
have just been, yeah. They could have just been actors. Wow.
Yeah, like it was so weird, like the things that like in my high school we would have. Like one week we would have Gene Kranz, who was like the one of the main people on the ground during the first moon landing, and also in he was also helped bring back Apollo 13. When it was, in danger,
Wow.
played by Ed Harris in the movie. He went to my high school, so he came and spoke one week, and then the next week, you got like these supposed former drug dealers or gang members, coming in orange jumpsuits and shit. It was just a weird time. And then
Yeah.
like when I was in grade school, you'd have people come in with puppets to teach you about, saying no to drugs and, making friends and all this other shit and everything,
It's like a feed your
stranger
dream
danger,
life.
it's such a weird world. I'm sure it's still weird for kids these days, but the 80s and 90s were just definitely a weird time to be alive.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So, what happens here at the beginning of this movie or this whatever you want to call it, this special?
Well, several things happen in a very quick amount of time. So you see this hand, you see the door open, you see a hand reach out for a piggy bank and then steals it. And then at this exact moment, Papa Smurf wakes up in the morning and notices that the piggy bank is gone.
And
So that brings up several questions right there,
he's
just in
inside
the
of a
beginning.
comic book too, so it's like
Yeah, and so this brings up several questions right now. So A, these are sentient beings that are also living in their own little world that's somehow connected to our world, but they still live in like a comic book or like in a toy or whatever, so that they are conscious of our world and they can observe it. That's
yeah.
point number one. Point number two is, I find it kind of strange that these cartoon characters are able to just essentially like watch the kids sleeping, like, which is just kind of weird. I'm
Yeah.
not saying that they're doing anything bad, but just like, I wouldn't like the idea of like just someone watching me sleep. Like, like
Yeah,
they
I mean,
just be
it's
like,
kind of like the Toy Story thing too. It's like, you kind
yeah.
of, yeah. Yeah, and it's weird too because you have like Papa Smurf who emerges from like a Smurfs comic book with other Smurfs, excluding Smurfette who is on the cover of the VHS, but she's not in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, so
I hate it when I do that. It's like, why do you do that? So
yeah.
many movies did that. And it's like, are you just trying to taunt us with the character that's not in the movie?
Yeah, or
Like, what?
they'll put somebody on the cover that's only in the movie for a little bit, and you think it's like the main star. Like I remember like this one like martial arts movie, and it said starring Chuck Norris, and his face was big on the VHS cover. And then my buddy and I got it home, and he's like only in it for about 5 minutes at most.
Right, it's like, God damn it, fucking liars. Yeah,
Yeah.
so Papa Smurf warns the others. Somehow Winnie the Pooh finds out. Pretty much all of them find out pretty
Yeah.
quickly
Yeah, and
about what's.
Winnie the Pooh is a stuffed animal.
Yeah.
Alvin, Simon, and Theodore from the Chipmunks come out of a record sleeve. Baby Kermit from Muppet Babies is an alarm clock, and Garfield is a lamp. And then you also have Elf who's in a random framed photo on her nightstand.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Alf threatens to murder and eat Garfield if he doesn't help with the mission.
Yes.
So that's nice.
But yeah, you know, he likes cats, so.
Yeah, and he likes to eat them, but yeah.
Yeah.
Which I never understood. Why cats in particular? Did they ever address that on Elf, or was that just something that was just, no one ever knew why?
I think on Melmac, people ate cats. I mean, the aliens ate cats. I'm not sure, but yeah, I don't know why. Probably they ate cats like we eat chicken or something, you know? So
gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah. And like you were saying, though, I'm trying to figure out the mechanics here of how these cartoons exist in the real world.
Yeah.
They all come to life from different forms and products that she has. But then randomly at the end, Slimer just phases through a wall out of nowhere. Like,
yeah, so he seems to be like a ghost who's just there all the time. Like,
yeah, and it's like, do these characters exist in the real world, or is it like Roger Rabbit does or something, or is it something else? Like, I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, it's very, there's a lot of philosophical questions to ponder with this, because, you know, one could write it off as our main character, Michael, having like a bad drug trip, or perhaps he's hallucinating due to withdrawals and he's just kind of imagining this. But we know that's not true, because at one point, Michael's sister, Tori, is directly interacting with one of these characters. So we it's a canonical fact that these creatures actually exist in our world.
Also, all these characters are interacting with each other while Tori is sleeping in the room, and there's no one else there to witness this. So
exactly. So this is a very interesting world that these characters exist in, that it's not just like a child's imagination, but that they come to life. And because with Toy Story, I was never really quite sure if they really came to life or if this was just like part of the fantasy of the kid. I forgot his name.
Andy? No, because Andy never, because they were always like, they always go back to sleep when Andy's in the room. So
okay.
So all we're seeing is when Andy's not there. So it's like the mechanics where it's like they're alive when he's, you know, not interacting with them. So
yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So that's like they're alive all the time, but they pretend that they're asleep when kids are around, sort of thing.
So like, yeah, their bedtime's like the opposite of the kids' bedtime. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So they're like night owls. They stay up all night, and then they go to sleep during daytime.
And while they're sleeping, the kid is glad-handing them all over the room and playing, you know, Space Ranger with them and stuff, you know?
Right. So, beating them up or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Or burying them in the backyard like I did with my Star Wars and He-Man figures that are probably worth a lot of money now.
I did that a couple times. Yeah, not with Star Wars, but with other... with other characters. So
I used to have these huge battles, and then when they died, I had to bury them.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's just respectful. I mean, you gotta let the bodies just hang out in the ground. But yeah, so so those are the mechanics that we don't really quite understand, but we do know that they're real. And so Michael, he's got a drug problem, and I do have a bone to pick, though, with one of the chipmunks. I'm not sure which one, but so... They open up his box because he broke the piggy bank, and Corey could hear him, and he found about $20 in change. Corey confronts him about it. He lies and says that he tried to save the piggy bank from falling to the floor from her bedroom into his bedroom.
Yeah, he was trying to fix it.
And she called him out on that. So I know that time travel is real, is canon in this world, but I don't think space travel that fast is canon. We didn't see any indication of that being true in this world. But time travel is canon, though, in this movie or special. So to recap, cartoon characters are alive, and it doesn't matter what form they take. They could be in the form of a comic book, a poster, a stuffed animal. It doesn't really matter. Slimer.
Yeah.
He's just there all the time, apparently. He's in the same form no matter what. So that's canon. And also time travel's canon. So those two things already kind of, this is a very bizarre and amazing
makes perfect
universe,
sense to me.
Which makes me wonder, why would you even take drugs in the world where two characters can come to life and time travel's real? I mean, like, why would you even need, but anyway, so it's marijuana, of course, because back then that was the whole, they said it was the gateway drug, which has been proven to not be. Well, here's the thing. It's the gateway drug because they made it the gateway drug. It's one of those self-fulfilling prophecy things. Like, you know, so.
Well, I mean, I bought a gateway computer once and it didn't come with marijuana. I don't know.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah.
Well, did you check inside? Sometimes they stash it inside the tower.
Yeah, I took the whole thing apart and I couldn't find it. Okay. Yeah.
Damn it, what sucks. So the bone I have to pick with one of the chipmunks is when they opened his box of drugs and it's got marijuana. Mm-hmm. He says, "Oh, this smells and looks like marijuana, a illegal substance that produces an artificial high." Well, you're wrong, because while it is or was an illegal substance that's progressively becoming more legal every year since then, it does not produce an artificial high.
It's a natural high. It's a
natural plant. Now you can argue that it's bad that you shouldn't get high.
Maybe they mean artificial as in the fact that it's from a substance as opposed to like the natural high you get from living life.
Maybe, but even then that's still not quite true, because our brains and our bodies actually produce small amounts of THC, I think, or at least there's something that receptors that specifically are designed to be able to get that high from THC, right? Yeah. So there's like literally a body substance connection that we share together. So he's wrong. It's not an artificial high. Now you could argue and say that it's bad to get high. Then now we're having discussion. Now we're cooking with gas, or maybe cooking with a crack pipe. I don't know, because later on we get introduced to hard drugs. But like, he's wrong. He's an idiot. So
yeah, that was Simon who did that. He's the smart one. So
yeah, well, Simon can fuck off, because he's a piece of shit and he lies. But
he's the know-it-all smart ass.
I think he should get beat up in this movie, but he doesn't. What else happens? Because that's our baseline story.
So Corey's expressing her concern about Michael's change in behavior, and then he storms out of the house, and the characters quickly realize that something must be done about his addiction. So they set off to save him, and they leave Pooh behind to look after Corey. Why does Pooh have to stay behind to look after Corey?
I don't know.
Now, my theory is that the parents suck. So,
Yeah, you're right. In your notes, you talk about how his parents have terrible observation skills.
Yes. Like
they have no clue what's going on.
So, we join Michael at a video arcade where he's smoking marijuana with his friends and this character named Smoke, who is like a ghost kind of dressed up like a gangster or a Wall Street businessman. And he's just completely like black smoke. And he's voiced by George C. Scott, Academy Award and Emmy Award winning actor and Tony Award winning actor. He's not an EGOT, but he's close. He didn't win a Grammy. But he's in this for some reason. Yeah. I mean, that, you know, there's, you know, obviously all the other characters are voiced by the people that, you know, voiced him in the original cartoons. Michael is voiced by Jason Marsden, who people may know from Step by Step, and he was also Max in the Goofy movie. He also played Eric's friend Jason Marsden. He had the same exact name as his real name on Boy Meets World for a couple seasons. And he's best friends. Wow. He's best friends with Will Friedle in real life, who played Eric on that show. So, yeah.
Bye.
And he was supposed to be on our podcast once a long time ago, but then the pandemic hit and there was weird shit. And so maybe he'll still be on it someday. We'll see. I got to get in contact with him again.
COVID.
What?
COVID.
Oh, COVID. Okay. I was hoping you weren't saying that about Jason. But anyway.
No.
Because Mars seems like a cool guy. Anyway, so they're at the arcade and Smoke is there. And one of Michael's friends shows everyone a drug that appears to be crack. And so they're in this kind of like a alley outside of the, or not an alley. They're in there and they show in the crack, and then there's like a, they start hearing police sirens, and then they all run off, and Michael ends up at hitting a dead end in an alley, and Smoke disappears and says, you know, at times like this, you're on your own, kid, you know, sort of thing. And so these friends obviously aren't real friends, and that's what, you know, and this weird, by the way, this weird smoke monster thing, I'm convinced that decades later it ended up on the island on Lost. That's just my headcanon. So the policeman shows up. You see like this silhouette of a policeman coming towards him, and he's like freaking out. And the policeman is revealed to be Bugs Bunny wearing a policeman's hat.
Mm.
So Bugs is committing a crime here, pretending to be a law officer.
Yep, yeah, he is.
So yeah,
that's a serious crime.
Yeah, he picks up Michael's marijuana cigarette, and he says, "What's this? A joint?" In his Bugs way. He asks him what made him start doing this in the first place, and so Michael kind of tries to walk off, and he basically says, "I did this because I just wanted to."
Great explanation right there.
Yeah, and that's
I want to.
That's why I do everything.
Wow.
It's not that I eat the tacos to hide my pain, but anyway. So the I'm joking. So Bugs stops him and tells him that while he can understand if he was led by curiosity, that the whole I just wanted to routine, he clearly needed a memory refresher. Bugs then throws smoke into a garbage can and traps him in there. So Bugs is committing another crime. And then he has a time machine that he borrowed from some coyote, he says, obviously a reference to Wile E. Coyote. And he grabs Michael and puts him into the thing to take him back 2 years to reveal that rather than wanting to get started on drugs, he was pressured into doing it by the older kids he found smoking. So Bugs basically kidnaps this kid, committing another crime. So I'm convinced that the biggest criminal in this whole project is Bugs fucking Bunny.
I mean, yeah, he commits three crimes in a matter of like 2 minutes. I mean, and all of them are serious crimes.
I mean, you know those Atlanta murder kidnappings that happened in the early 80s and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So the MO of the person that was stealing these people, he was pretending to be an officer, and then he kidnapped them into a vehicle and then killed them. So I'm pretty sure that maybe Bugs Bunny was the Atlanta murderer.
I mean, it's possible. Or at least a copycat.
Yeah.
Which, both are bad.
Mm-hmm. So Bugs basically says, do you still think this was your choice? And Michael confesses that he did do it because he didn't want them to think he was a wimp. Then Bugs says, it's better a wimp than a all-day sucker.
Which, okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a weird phrase. maybe my mind is just ruined, but when I hear all-day sucker, it goes somewhere. And
Well, if you take enough drugs, you end up being an all-day sucker because you need to do that to make money. And then,
yeah. And then you need to pay for your drugs. And yes. So, if you don't have the money, then,
Maybe Bugs was trying to pimp him out. I don't know what's going
maybe,
on here.
I don't know. That's a fourth crime. Very serious crime. So we got Bugs is basically going to jail for about 50 years at this point if he gets caught.
Yes.
When you got concurrent crimes.
And Mel,
the other thing, too.
And Mel Blanc is rolling. Mel Blanc is rolling over in his grave. Yeah.
Yeah. So the thing that kind of gets me out, too, is I didn't want them to think I was a wimp. So that's a weird choice of words because I could think loser. I could say, oh, you're no fun. Why wimp? Because wimp is someone who is not strong.
Yeah, it's usually what you call somebody when they back down from a fight or something.
Yeah. So why would you use that word for someone not taking drugs? So you're saying you're not strong for not taking drugs? It's like when Trump would say everything beautiful. A beautiful piece of chocolate cake. Well, it's a cake. You eat it, so it'd be tasty. Use the right words, but whatever. And then,
well, I mean, cake can be beautiful. Have you seen that show?
It can.
Have you seen that show, Is This Cake?
And it's true, but he uses beautiful for like everything. Like, even back when he was, talking about, doing something about Syria, Assad, the dictator.
Yeah.
And he's like, Assad is killing beautiful babies. Like, sorry, just, he's obsessed with the word beautiful, and he just says it for everything. But, they call him a wimp. Fine, whatever. It's just, a bone I had to pick with that. I would say loser, or I would say, you're being a chump, or, whatever. And, it's just a very light bone to pick with the movie.
So Bugs then tells him, so it's kind of like the old saying, if everybody else was jumping off a cliff, would you go too?
Yes, I would.
And then he watches them, Michael in the past, as he gives into the pressure and tries the marijuana. Bugs observes this and he says, I guess you would, wouldn't you? Not very bright, definitely not one of the world's most world's most foremost thinkers. So Bugs, again, being an asshole here, makes the kid feel stupid.
I know. You're making it worse, dude.
Yeah. I don't know how that's going
to
help
him learn. Like, yeah, let's drive him back to drugs.
So maybe Trump is Bugs Bunny. I'm confused. Anyway, so... So then we're back at home, and Michael's father opens the refrigerator and notices that two of his beers are missing, but his gaslighting wife convinces him that he drank them the night before while watching football. So... The mom seems to think that her husband is such a drunk he forgot he drank a couple of beers. So obviously nobody in this family pays attention to each other.
No wonder Mikey was on drugs.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'm going to go to the garage now. Like, he just rolls with it.
I mean, if you're that big of an alcoholic that you can't remember if you drank two beers or not the night before.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that happens, but it's just, I don't know.
And also, too, it was daytime, so he's a day drinker. So.
Or he just opened up the fridge and was trying to get some sandwiches materials out of there and realized that the weird wooden box that his beers were in, because if you looked at it, it was like a wooden crate.
Yeah, it's like, okay, we're doing wood boxes now. Is this 1920s?
Like, yeah, I don't know if beer came like that in 1990, but maybe it did. Because
I don't think it
did. I don't remember my dad's beer looking like that when I was a kid.
I don't think they did that.
Pretty sure it came in like a cardboard box like it does today.
Yeah.
So basically, then all of a sudden Michael's mom starts to, you know, wonder about Mikey here. And she expresses her concerns to her like 8-year-old kid, Corey, you know, because that's what you do when you have issues and wondering about your kid. You talk to your 8-year-old.
Yeah. Make her responsible for her older sibling.
Yeah. And so she's like, she asks if there's anything wrong. And Corey says no. And then the mom reminds her that we love you both. And if something was wrong that she would want to know.
Yep.
And then Pooh comes to life soon after that in Corey's arms and asks why she didn't tell her mother that she was worried about Michael.
Yep.
That's at that point, I'd start to be worried about myself because my fucking stuffed animal is talking to me.
But we know it's real because Michael is also experiencing the same thing going on. So these characters are actually come to life. We meet Michelangelo, though, from Ninja Turtles. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we meet him later. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Corey doesn't want to say anything because she's worried that she doesn't want to be a snitch because, you know, snitches get stitches, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. True.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think this family would lead a kid to drugs.
I think so. They're very neglectful and they don't really pay attention to what's going on in their children's lives.
Yes. So then we're in a park here after that.
Anyway.
And one of Mikey's friends says that she can buy crack cocaine for $10.
Oh, boy.
One of his friends wearing a Blossom-like hat and stuff.
Hey.
I don't know. And I have in my notes here, is that a good or bad deal for crack? How much crack was it? I don't know.
I did some research. I couldn't really find much. There's actually a website called, like, the National or something, like, I forgot what it was. Basically, it went from like European countries and also the USA. They did things for inflation. They also did things for the purity of the crack cocaine. Well, that was just for regular cocaine. I couldn't find crack cocaine. I didn't want to do too much research because I didn't want, like, the police come to me, like, why is this person researching how much crack cocaine costs?
Well, you shouldn't worry because you work for the CIA, so you could probably get out of it.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, this was like all part of my job. But I'd say for inflation-wise, $10 would be probably worth, what, $25, maybe $30 now or something like that. Can't be that bad of a deal.
By the way, the CIA you work for, is that the Cartoon Intelligence Agency?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Just checking.
That's how I know that these characters are real, because we were briefed about this movie, and it's canon. It's a fact that these cartoon characters actually
who's your boss? Who's your boss? Who's your boss? Is it like Mickey Mouse or something?
My boss is the Roadrunner. So the time machine actually was from the Roadrunner, and then Coyote stole it from him.
Oh, okay.
He was tired of always losing all the time. You know how?
Do they both work for different organizations? Like, does the Wile E. Coyote work for like the FBI, the fictional Bros Institute?
Well, kind of. He also doubles as an East German spy in 1990. Even though at that point, I think East German was still no longer. but he was like a Dumbledore situation, right? Where he was spying for America, but also pretending to spy for East Germany, but told East Germany that he is fake spying for America. So they think that he is the double agent for them, but he's actually a double agent for America.
So he's like a triple agent.
There's a triple agent, Professor Snape was in Harry Potter. Yeah. But he does not like Roadrunner very much because of their long-going feud.
Oh, okay.
And he stole a time machine from Roadrunner because he wanted to study all the times that he lost against the Roadrunner. And so he's trying to, study the Roadrunner's, techniques and things like
that. And maybe figure out why he can walk out in the air off of a cliff and then fall.
Well, see, we're studying, physics and stuff like that as well of how this is possible. And there's lots of stuff goes on in this particular department of intelligence.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm pretty sure that if he did walk off that cliff, then Michael would follow him.
I think you're correct in that assessment.
So, so basically now his friends are trying to say, because he says he's uncertain about the crack. He's like, that's serious stuff,
It is. Very serious.
And one of his friends replies, come on, Michael, you're not going to chicken out on your friends now, are you? Because that's how kids talked in the 90s.
Yep.
So then our good buddy Smoke, somehow got out of the garbage can and he appears. And he joins in the taunting and starts calling him a baby and all this other shit. And then he steals Michael's wallet, another crime being committed, this time not by Bugs. And he tosses it to the blossom looking chick, who runs off with it down an alley. Michael starts chasing her, but falls down a manhole with Smoke.
Yeah.
Now that's something that the city should have taken care of. There shouldn't be an open manhole that you can fall down.
No, shouldn't be. It's dangerous. But yeah. Just a quick note on that, right? So now kind of it's canon that not only are these creatures alive, they can have actual interactions within the physical world. Mm-hmm. Because Smoke, which is presumably an amorphous being, can actually physically take a wallet, grab it,
and throw it,
and then toss it to another human being.
Yeah.
So that's another addition to our lore here in this movie.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Do you have dreams that you want to achieve but are scared to do so due to self-doubt, fear, and other people's criticism? I have just what you need. You need a dose of the Living the Dream with Curveball podcast, where I interview guests that will motivate and inspire you to stop at nothing to achieve your dreams. And always remember, if you believe, you can achieve.
The Living the Dream with Curveball podcast is available on your favorite podcast app.
Hey, everybody. Why don't you give the old Black Lincoln Collective podcast a listen? We're funny, we're fat, and we're here 24/7 at blcpodcast.com. Anytime you want to listen, anywhere, all your favorite podcast apps. Of course, we have a YouTube channel where you can stream live with the show. Check out our shorts. We're funnier the less you hear of us. That's been a Black Lincoln Collective podcast at blcpodcast.com.
So basically, then they're in this They fall down this manhole cover, and they are greeted by Michelangelo, Baby Kermit, Baby Miss Piggy, and Baby Gonzo. And then somehow down in this sewer system, there's a big roller coaster ride that they go through and through a drug-inflicted human brain.
Yep.
I'm still trying to figure out how a fun ride that you would pay money to go to an amusement park to ride would make you not want to take drugs.
Especially if you're riding through a human brain and you've been reduced to like miniature size, like kind of like Quantum Realm almost a little bit, like with Ant-Man.
Well, it's like at Disney World they used to have, I mean, years ago, like in, I think it was at Epcot or something, they used to have this like, ride where you would actually they had this like big machine that pointed at you and shrunk you down, and then you went inside the human body. It didn't,
that's pretty cool.
Didn't really shrink you, but you know
oh damn it,
yeah, you know, it was all an illusion, my friend.
I don't like that.
Yeah. So yeah, but basically they're like, you know, going through all this. They proceed to go on this roller coaster ride through a drug inflicted human brain, like I said. When it's over, he realizes that the brain they just toured is his own, and they are currently inside him, which I'm trying to figure out. So he's small, but he's inside himself. So that's just weird. How does that work?
Right. So that's the problem I was having here with the mechanics, right? So he gets, the manhole, Michelangelo pulls, then they go down a drain, and they're in his brain.
That sewage in there was like neon colored. It was weird. But yeah,
it was weird. There was definitely some weird chemicals going on there. I'm not sure. Maybe the CIA put them in there to make the people docile, like with the fluoride water and things like that.
Yeah.
But and so if he's in his own brain, meaning his physical body has been shrunk and it's in his own brain, does that mean now there's two physical bodies? Because his big physical body is currently moving and walking, but his small physical body is currently in his brain. So now, how do we have two physical Michaels roaming around this world? Is the multiverse real in this canon now?
Or it was through, like, the time travel that Bugs had.
Or yeah, maybe Bugs, but we didn't see that.
But so you're not supposed to, I mean, if we go by certain time travel rules, you're not supposed to interact with yourself, so...
But technically he wouldn't be, because he's inside his own brain, so... the Michael that's outside wouldn't know that he's being interacted with the miniature version of himself who's currently in his brain. So maybe they can get away with that, kind of, you know, because another thing too is he is high as a kite right now, so he probably wouldn't even remember this anyway. Because at one point he's trying to use a skateboard and he's like terrible at it. Like,
maybe
he's like, we gotta help him, he's gonna hurt himself.
Maybe we all have a little one of ourselves inside of our brains.
I mean, maybe, I don't know, but in accordance to this movie,
maybe currently I am inside my own brain and the earth that I'm living in is actually just my brain, and nothing is real and this is all an illusion. And
if you go down that route, people have literally gone insane from pondering that philosophical question, actually, of like asking themselves, like, does anything really exist outside of me? Because how would you know? How could you really know 100% that other people you talk to are real? Because you can't be them. So you can't like know from their perspective that they are real, right?
Yeah, it's
so
like,
it does, yeah, you go crazy.
You
thinking
can't
about
see
this.
The world through other people's eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
True. Or any creature's eyes or any object. Because, you know, are the objects created by my consciousness?
I remember when I was in the fourth grade and I freaked out a priest by asking him if I saw the world through your eyes, would I see red the same way that you see red, or would your red be my green?
Or something like that. Yeah. The thing is, with that one, what they probably would say as a counter argument, it doesn't mean that's right, but what they would say is, well, the consensus is that when people see this color and they say it's red, so even if you see a different color, that's what majority say red is. But that's just consensus of what other people say.
But that wasn't my question. My question was really, like, we all agree that this is red, but how do I know that you're not seeing it the way I see green?
Right, yeah. So you just know that this is, like, again, the consensus say this is, but we don't actually know. exactly. It's like a philosophical question, right? But, like, this movie... if you really break down this movie, it's a deep philosophical piece of artwork, and it was masqueraded as a children's cartoon, but as a way to say no to drugs. But really, when underneath that is the secret message, which is consciousness real? Is God real? Is Michael God? Is Corey God? Are their parents gods? I sure hope not, because neglectful.
This is really up there with some of the like experimental films I watched in my college classes, like Maya Deren or like Stan Brakhage or some other people. Like, it's just like, you know, really deep, man. Some Kenneth Anger stuff, you know, different things like that.
Yeah.
Okay, anyways. Yeah, totally. All right, back to the plot here.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sorry. I feel like I'm on drugs now just by talking about
Me too.
So like, this movie is creating a natural high, and not an artificial high, like Simon said, a natural high from talking about this movie.
So he, anyways, he's inside his own brain, and he's riding on a skateboard and all this other shit, and they realize that they're about to, you know, fall down, and the babies escape, but Michael and Smoke are trapped in. And after falling over, Michael wakes up at the feet of Huey, Dewey, and Louie, who, after asking Michael if he's okay, proceed to ask Michael why he didn't just say no. Michael tells them because he didn't want to. Yep.
Great answer. I wanted to, and then I didn't want to.
Yep. That's how Michael, you know, that's how he rolls, man.
Right.
But they suspect that it's because he doesn't know how to say no. The kid's like 14. He knows how to say no. For crying. Anyway, so
yeah.
So then they are joined by other characters like Tigger and stuff, and they teach him through a song that's called "Wonderful Ways to Say No," written again by Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, Academy Award winning composers. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
They also wrote. They also wrote the music to "Little Shop of Horrors." You know. They anyways, so
he believed in this project. That's why he did it.
Well, I mean, the movie was produced by Roy E. Disney, nephew to Walt Disney. So who was at one point he was the head of the board of Disney and stuff. So and he was Roy Disney's son. Roy Disney Sr. was Walt's older brother, who basically was the president of the Walt Disney Company and stuff. So anyways, but basically all of this so far to me, including the song, has seemed like a drug induced nightmare. Michael then wakes up in his own bedroom, and he starts to think, like I did, that the whole thing's merely a nightmare. And then Corey comes in and tells him that Pooh wants him to Pooh wants him to know, wants to know why he never talks to their parents about his problems.
Well, I know why, because they don't listen. They're not around mentally, at least.
I mean, his dad doesn't know how many beers are missing from the fucking fridge. So he basically says, you know, tell Pooh to mind his own business, and then threatens his little sister.
He physically assaults his little sister by pushing her into a wall. So yeah. That's a crime right there. And
it's like, you know, you can't tattle on me and shit. And then he immediately regrets his behavior, though. I mean, to be fair. So, you know, he's going to be okay, like any abuser. Anyway, so then Smoke comes out from under the bed.
Fucking Smoke.
Yeah. And he claims that, you know, Michael did the right thing, you know, basically by pushing his sister. Anyway, so...
His younger sister is like 7 or 8.
Yeah. And but Michael's like, I don't know what's right anymore, you know, and he's like, that's my little sister, blah, blah, blah. And then he stares at the mirror inside of his marijuana box, because every good marijuana box needs a mirror.
That's the thing, too, with a lot of these things. Like, they have a drug box, like, for some reason. Like, I never understood. Even in, like, TV shows, like with Breaking Bad, Jesse had a drug box. Like, why... Yeah. Is this a thing? Like, I don't, maybe to carry it with them when they go places.
So.
Like,
in this, it always reminds me. Do you ever remember that SNL sketch with Rob Schneider? Who, I mean, I'm not a big fan of his, but this one that was kind of funny back in the day, it was like a recurring sketch where he would work in this like weird shop, and he was like this hippie, and he would sell some weird, like any random item, and he'd be like, you can put your weed in there, man.
No, I don't remember. I mean, I remember the John Stewart thing from Half Baked, where he was like, have you ever watched baseball on weed or whatever? Like,
Yeah, but this one was like Rob Schneider was like he worked in this like kind of hippie sort of store or whatever, and they sold like knickknacks and stuff, and then you know it'd be like, hey man, you know you can put your weed in there.
Wow, no, I don't remember that one.
It always made me laugh for some reason. Anyway, so back when Rob Schneider was actually kind of funny.
Now he's like, you could put your ivermectin in there, bro.
Yeah.
While
I go off and do the voice in Chipchilla, a Bluey knockoff cartoon for kids.
Oh my god!
Yeah, for Bent Key.
Wow.
Daily Wire.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he plays the dad in this thing called Chipchilla, which is basically a ripoff of Bluey, made by Jeremy Boring and Ben Shapiro and all them. Anyway, so
ow.
So they basically they you know so he's looking in this mirror in his marijuana box. His reflection is then replaced with Elf's for some reason, and then Elf kidnaps him through the mirror. You know, so Elf.
So now we have space in time continuum type of travel. It's canon now in this world as well. A lot of weird shit is going on in this world. I don't know what this is. If this is our Earth or Earth 3 or 4 or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know. Something's going on here.
I want to live in this world because I'd like to be able to look in the mirror and then have Elf just pull me into it and I could go in.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be fun.
That'd be pretty sweet. I don't know.
So then he's inside of a hall of mirrors, like, you know, at an amusement park sort of thing. And Elf shows Michael his reflection of how he looks today. And then reflection that if he doesn't stop taking drugs, an aged corpse-like version of himself. And Michael's like, you know, I can quit at any time sort of thing. And that he's in charge of his own life. And then Elf takes him by the hand and directs him to talk to the man in charge. Who is Smoke? So I'm trying to figure this out.
Smoke was behind it all.
So is Elf a lackey for Smoke? I'm confused. Is he like, you know, is Smoke like a mafioso guy and like his muscle is Elf? I'm trying to figure this out.
I don't think so. Because he's like against Smoke, so I don't know why he'd be. But yeah, he does take him to him, so that is kind of weird. Maybe he's doing like a double thing.
Yeah.
Maybe he's pretending to be for Smoke, but he's secretly telling Michael like the truth about drugs. And he's like, okay,
yeah,
I'm going to show you who's in charge type of thing. He's like, okay, Smoke, here he is. And he's like whispering, remember what I said about drugs, Michael? And then like Smoke hears him and he kills him or whatever. But somehow Smoke returned, like with Star Wars, because Snoke was just the like clone, I guess, of Palpatine.
Well, that was Snoke.
I know, I'm just kidding. somehow Smoke returned. This fucking guy, this amorphous being that somehow can occasionally touch the physical universe, which we haven't really established how that's possible. But then again, apparently everything's possible in this world. So yes. I just can't be too surprised.
So the whole time, though, I think Elf just seems to be gaslighting him here by convincing him that he looks worse than he actually does, too. But anyway,
of course.
Yeah. So then then Corey and Pooh re-enter Michael's room and find his marijuana box, and then Smoke appears in there and tempts Corey to open up the box.
Yeah, do it.
And says he's a friend of her brother's, and and says, open up the box, Corey. Pooh basically, you know, like, don't do it. And then he says a line which I think is funny. It's like, if I were you, which I'm not, I wouldn't listen to him. So Pooh is then thrown into a cabinet by Smoke. So they're abusing a bear. And
false imprisonment.
Animal abuse.
Yep.
Stuffed animal abuse, but still animal abuse.
Yeah, well, still. I mean, they're alive, so, you know.
PETA better, you know, get on that. Anyway, so Corey opens up the box but doesn't know what its contents are. So, like, that's the other thing. It's like, I'm tempting you, but, you know, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, you don't really know how to smoke anything or do anything. So, you know, just...
I mean, what's you going to do? Eat it? It's not going to do anything.
Yeah, and it's like, Smoke suggests that she find out for herself. It's like, your brother uses it. Then Corey is convinced, like, you know, like, well, maybe if I do this, I can be friends with my brother again.
Right, yep.
Yeah, because you know what? I remember when I was a kid, my sister and I used to do drugs together when she was like 8 years old, you know.
Yep.
Good times, good times.
good times, yep.
We never did that.
Wow. I'm good.
Yeah, no. So then meanwhile, Michael comes to a fortune-telling tent outside of the Hall of Mirrors. And there's a stall tender there, that's fortune teller, and it's Daffy Duck. And first he's trying to tell his future on a bowling ball, but that doesn't work.
Okay.
That's the humor we're going for here.
Yeah, apparently.
And so he shows him his future, which is behind these doors, and it turns out that it's Michael Lyon on his deathbed, even more ravaged than he was when Elf showed him his future. He's like, this is my future? He's like, if you don't get off those drugs...
You don't get off the weed pipe.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get a needle in his hand. Like, I think there's a heroin addict, essentially, is what they were implying with that vision.
And then Elf, Bugs Bunny, the Muppet Babies, Huey, Dewey, and Louie, and Michelangelo all return and are, giving further words of encouragement, you know. So Michael asks where he can leave, to which they point to a door. And honestly, I think I would get off drugs just in the hopes that random cartoon characters would leave me the hell alone.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I'd be like, all right, it's not worth it.
Yeah. You know, leave me the fuck alone, Huey. Then, Michael runs through the door back into his bedroom just in time to stop Corey from using the drugs herself. I'm not sure how she was going to, because I don't think she knew how. He tells her that he never wants to see her end up like him and admits that he was wrong, though he is unsure if he can change. And then she advises him to talk problems out with the parents and saying that they can help. And then Smoke is trying to, be the devil here and say, drugs are good, man. So then he throws him out a window into a garbage truck, and Smoke's yelling, you can't be rid of me that easily, and he vows to return. In the meantime, I'm pretty sure that he got the garbage man hooked on crack.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, or sanitation worker, if we want to be proper. Michael admits, he knows that little Smokey is going to return, and but Corey states that when he gets here, we'll be ready for him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, he won't.
No, I mean, you weren't ready in the first place. But anyway, yeah. So the parents are oblivious to everything that's going on.
Yep.
So then the cartoon characters are now appearing on a poster on the wall as a reminder of Michael to just say no. Mm-hmm. And after Michael lets poo out of his cabinet that he got thrown into. Poo then jumps into the poster too for some fucking reason, and Michael tells Corey, come on sis, let's go talk to mom and dad. Okay, now my final thoughts here on this thing. What kind of drugs do you think the writers were on while they were writing this fever dream of a Just Say No cartoon that I'm pretty sure most kids missed the point of and were just excited to see Elf hanging out with Garfield and Huey, Dewey, and Louie and shit, and probably convince them to try drugs.
Yeah, I'm thinking cocaine, just like with the Star Wars holiday special.
That one we know for sure is true. So.
No, yeah, that's like factual.
Bruce Valanche actually mentioned that. So yeah, one of the writers of it. So yeah.
I would say cocaine because, we might be tempted to say weed or LSD. The problem with that is that those drugs can't really be very productive on, at least from a creative perspective. I know a lot of people think that, like, oh man, I wrote my best stuff on weed. That's the minority. Most people cannot do much. Yeah. Creativity when they're on weed because it's a downer, and they might be able to think deep thoughts, but they can't really write it down because they're too tired or whatever. LSD, similar but more advanced because you're having like actual hallucinations or cocaine's a stimulant, and you would think, well, stimulants don't make you like trip out, hallucinate. Wrong, actually, that's not true. Can actually cause light hallucination. Also, it gives you an oversized sense of confidence so that you think any of your ideas are good ideas, no matter how stupid and crazy they are. Like, again, with the Star Wars holiday special, they probably thought this was the most genius thing they've ever created. And then they watch it and they're like, what the fuck were we thinking? So, that's my guess. Not crack cocaine, just regular, pure grade, expensive cocaine that like rich businessmen take,
So I agree wholeheartedly. So some stray, trivia here. This was the first time that Bugs Bunny and Daffy were voiced by somebody other than Mel Blanc, who had died a few months before the production of this, and Jeff Bergman took over. So this is the first time that those characters were ever voiced by somebody other than Mel Blanc. Yeah, Michelangelo does not appear on the cover of the VHS for some reason.
Yeah, they got a cover. They got a picture of someone who's not in the movie.
Yeah.
But they don't put a picture of someone who is in the movie. Good job. That's awesome. Good one.
Maybe they made the poster before they made the movie or something.
You know, that's actually possible. I wouldn't be surprised if they would actually do something like that, to be honest, because like it's the easiest thing first, you know, to do. So,
yeah. So for a long time, it was reported that the special was never rerun because Garfield was used without permission of his creator, Jim Davis. Garfield and Friends writer Mark Evaner stated that Davis approved of Garfield's appearance, but the special could only be shown for a limited time as part of the agreement. So he knew that he was in it. He just only allowed them to show it for a limited amount of time.
Okay.
Yeah. He used to be very strict about different things. He was really smart with marketing, though, when it came to things. Okay, so interesting things that I've learned by doing research on this. Okay, so there's an episode of the Elf TV show, the live action TV show, where basically he gets Brian on there drunk.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, kind of, you know, doing the opposite of what he's trying to do here. There's so like in the United States where we had President Bush and Barbara Bush, you know, introduce this thing. In Australia, Bob and Hazel Hawke, who were the prime minister and his wife, there introduced it when it aired there. Which is funny because Bob Hawke was known for being a known for his ability to like basically chug beers.
So. Wow.
And in the introduction, he's, you know, telling kids not to do drugs or drink and stuff. So it's just kind of funny.
Yeah. Meanwhile, while he's chugging like a full pitcher of beer,
I guess he would be at like, you know, like horse races and other sporting events and stuff like that, and he would get like the big long glasses of beer and just chug them.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's basically it. Any other thoughts here on this before we wrap things up?
No, not really. I'd recommend it. I think it was a fun little. It's like only like 25 minutes long if you don't count the President Bush or the Australian version with Prime Minister
or the Ronald McDonald House commercials that are on it too. So yeah,
I watched both versions. I watched the one you sent me, and then I watched the one with the commercials taken out.
Yeah,
I like to watch the ones where it's like the full thing, just to kind of have like the full experience of what I kind of like doing. Or also too, like watching a VHS rip of a movie as opposed to like the remastered. I don't know, something like that, like nostalgia bait or whatever. You know,
yeah, it's a good thing. I mean, I like it when there's commercials, but this didn't actually have real commercials except for the Ronald McDonald House ones. So basically, you know, I enjoyed this. I think it's worth watching. If you enjoyed our little you know, summary of this here and review, be sure to give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or Spotify or wherever you can give us reviews. I mean, walk down the street, you know, talk to a random cartoon character you see down an alley.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Not smoke.
No. Well, I mean, if he wants to give us a 5-star review, I'll take it.
Sure. Okay. You know,
I won't say no to that. Anyways, so anyways, even though there are, you know, millions of wonderful ways to say no.
True.
Yes. If I've learned anything from this. Check out our TeePublic and our Patreon if you want to help us out. We've got some great stuff there. Check out alltoreal2.com for everything else. And make sure you subscribe to the show, share it. Subscribe to our YouTube if you'd like, our TikTok, all of our social media. Stalk us. I'd enjoy that.
Not enough.
Online.
Yeah. Even that's a little bit too much. You can stalk you. I don't want to.
I don't mean our personal pages. I'm just talking about
the
pages for the stalk. Yeah, okay. Stalk the podcast.
Sure.
Not Sesame or I. You know.
Well.
But if you give us $1 million, we'll let you stalk us.
Well, we'll have to negotiate the terms on that. Like, yeah. How long are we talking here?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, part of the thing is you have to become a smoke monster that follows us around. And
So that's going to be the pros and cons of that. Yeah. But you can apparently at least temporarily reach into the physical world. I'm not sure if that's a permanent thing or if that's something you can only do a few times a day. We haven't really worked that out yet. Yeah. But
we'll figure out all the physics on that. You know, we'll talk to like NASA or somebody. They'll figure it out. And I don't know why NASA, but you know, whatever. We'll go to CERN. We'll go somewhere.
Yeah.
Somewhere with some smart people. And just, you know, be good, you know, do all the good stuff.
Yep.
Just say no, you know, I mean, unless it's, you know, legal and, you know, you're an adult and, you know, I'm not going to stop you from partaking in the, in the wacky tobacco or anything. So, but
devil's lettuce, yeah.
The devil's lettuce, you know, the devil's cabbage,
Wow.
Anyways, until next time, folks, just remember that I love you. There are millions of wonderful ways to say no.
Yep.
Sesame loves you. And until next time, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.